Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello and welcome to episode number 162, take two of the Self-Help Podcast. And we, Edward Lamb, Sean Orford and Belinda Clare. How are you doing, Belinda?
Fine, thank you.
I'm going to introduce you properly very shortly. Okay. You've got to stay quiet just for a little bit longer. But we're talking... It will. We're talking this morning with Belinda about chronic pain, which Belinda is an expert. Right? Yeah, okay.
But that makes it sound like she goes around causing chronic pain.
Yeah, no comment. Okay, I didn't quite do that right. We'll get a proper introduction shortly. For those that are new to the show, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Head over, take a look at all the show notes and links. Belinda has come with a stack of books. She's an avid reader. We're going to link to all these books and lots of other things, I'm sure. And there's loads of other stuff on the website you should check out, including some free meditation files you can get your hands on if you put your email address in one of the boxes. How you doing, Sean? You okay?
I'm stunningly wonderful. I've just been running, so I'm back to running.
You're back in the game?
Yeah, Conrad, my running guru, has been
back around. Rockmountainfitness.co.uk is Conrad's site.
Yeah, I've been easing back on the show, actually. He's doing some new stuff.
Yeah, yeah, he's moved on quite a bit.
Yeah, some good stuff. Yeah, need to get him back. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm cool. It's been a bit of a mad view. I mean, I'm conscious by the time this goes out, it's going to be a few weeks down the line, but I feel like the country is still settling down a bit after a slight political decision which has gone on. But I just want to ask you, Sean, how... I don't want to hear any, like, good or bad, all that stuff, but how do you heal a nation? Because at the moment we seem quite split down the middle.
I think that the thing is probably going to be the one that no one ever wants to hear, which is time is a good healer. I think it's just going to take time for us to process and get used to the ideas. And people are scared of some things and people are cocky about other things and we don't know the realities. The other thing is that the referendum was only an advisory referendum. No one's actually triggered the process.
Well, not when we're recording this by the time. It's going to be months, I think, but...
They were talking. The Conservative Party were talking about maybe there needs to be an election to make sure that the person that does it has the mandate of the people to do it. And that's one of those. So who knows?
Yeah, I've learned a lot about our political system. It's just quite, one of the plus signs. I think everyone's all of a sudden got really involved and said, "Hang on a minute, this is a bit crazy, isn't it?"
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. All right, let's leave that topic aside and crack on because I want to introduce Belinda Clare. Who is a clinical... Hang on a sec, where's my show notes? A clinical massage therapist. She's a friend of ours, a networking pal. Your website, Belinda, is paincaremassage.co.uk. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, yeah.
Not nervous?
A little bit. Been up since 6 o'clock.
Oh, really? Yeah. Doing your homework, got your notes ready?
Yeah, getting all my script ready, yeah.
Tell us a bit about your practice and...
Okay.
Yeah, what the work that you do.
Okay, I'll just give you a little bit of a background to why I started the practice. 8 years ago, I was suffering with chronic neck and shoulder pain. I was under a specialist up at Darra Park, and he told me that it was wear and tear. I was actually 40 at that time, and I thought, wear and tear at 40? I'm not having that. And they said that all they could do for me was give me cortisone injections, and I thought, no, I'm not having that either. So I had to go and do some research, so wonderful Google. I went and Googled my symptoms, and I found...
That's what GPs do anyway, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's
great.
So I Googled, and I found the Jing Institute in Brighton, the first sort of people that I contacted. So I phoned them up, and they said, oh yes, we can help you do some clinical massage on your neck and shoulders and do some fascial release. And I was like, oh, right, sounds interesting, And they gave me a phone number for a lady in Liverpool, Tracy Keenan, her name is. So it goes over to just meet her, get some massage from her, clinical massage, and within 6 months or so, I was completely, pain-free. And I thought, this is strange, because I was told as well that I had two bulging discs in my neck at C6 and 7. And I thought, well, the pain's gone, how come? Maybe the bulges have gone, I don't know. But I never actually went back and got another MRI scan, so I assume, they're still there. So that was 8 years ago, and then 3.5 years ago, I got made redundant, and I thought, right, time to change, follow my heart. So I got into clinical massage, went down to Jing, trained as a clinical massage therapist. Jing Institute in Brighton, and trained there for a year. I went down there every month or so, did a bit of stuff in Wigan as well.
Yep.
And then I got into doing clinical massage 2.5 years ago. But why my journey has kind of evolved into the work I'm going to talk about next is because I was massaging people, getting them out of pain. But then they'd come back to me and they'd say, oh, you know, it's come back. And I would be thinking, well, why has it come back? What have you done? And they'd say, well, I've done a bit of gardening. And I was like, no, that can't be it. Oh, well, I have been stressed. And I thought, what's stress got to do with it? And funny enough, the way time kind of synchronicity, a friend of mine came along and said, I've done a course on stress. And I was like, really? So she told me about this course with Georgie Oldfield, Serpa.
Okay,
and I went and bought the book. Yeah, this is one of my books. So it's the first book I'm going to tell you about. It's called The Chronic Pain, Your Key to Recovery by Georgie Oldfield. And I bought that book. I read it in 3 days because it's an easy read book, but it's also really interesting.
You've got lots of pictures.
Yeah, lots of pictures. Yeah, yeah, I like my pictures. I love my And then I went on to buy Dr. John Sarno's book, who's a New York doctor over in New York, on the healing, the mind-body prescription, heal your pain, heal your body. And it kind of evolved from there. So in September of last year, I went and did the Serpa course with Georgie Oldfield. And now I'm looking at not just the body, but the mind, because you cannot ignore the mind, because the mind and the body are truly one. So that's where I am at the moment. I'm kind of now moving into the field of looking at why the mind plays a part in the body.
Do you have a lot of people come to you for as a massage therapist just looking for relaxation?
Yeah.
And then kind of
I advertise for people who are in pain, chronic pain, okay? And I'll just distinguish between chronic pain and acute pain. Acute pain is usually sort of, you know, an injury. You've kind of fell over or hurt yourself in the garden or whatever.
Or when Sean did his tendon.
Yes. Yes. Now, usually, your normal muscular sort of damage takes, you know, or even, to be honest, if you break your femur in half, it fixes in 6 weeks. So there's lots of research out there that confirms this. You know, your body will fix itself within 6 weeks. After those 6 weeks, different though when it comes to tendons and ligaments, because there's not enough blood vessels in those areas, so it takes longer to heal. So, for example, Sean's tendon, you know, it took longer because...
He's old.
It's because the tendons take longer to heal, and he was quite fearful. You know?
Yeah. I limped for 6 months while it was healing, and I assume that most of that was the healing, that it was getting better, but then it was followed by the fear of it happening again.
Yeah.
So I've just started running again now, but I've been a year out. And it was, in the end, it was my anxiety about, am I going to do this again?
Yeah. I follow sports quite a lot, sports. And obviously footballers, let's say for example, get injured a lot, and a lot of them have serious injuries where they're out for 6-12 months, sometimes longer. But there's a story actually, one of the Wales players in the championships that will be done by now, who broke a bone in his foot like 6 weeks before the tournament started. And usually, you know, if a football player breaks anything, it's like in the leg or like from the waist down.
Because it's what they're told.
They're out for 6 months.
Yeah, but they're told you have to rest.
He was playing. He was playing at the tournament within 6 weeks. And everyone's like, wow, that happened. So I just wonder if it's...
It's the same. It's basically the body does fix itself, but it's the fear and the angst that comes with it.
And then you have... Yeah, I mean, there's players like Michael Owen and Alan Shearer who had repeat injuries over their career. Serious, like, knee injuries. And they... I mean, I'm not either way saying it was... relate to the mind, I don't know really.
Yeah.
But they would have these repeat serious knee injuries and they'd have to go back to the States for this huge surgery. They'd be out for a year, they'd come back brilliant for a year, power it'd go again.
Well, the indicator's always pain, isn't it? So if they're still in pain, then there's still something wrong. Mm-hmm. But instead of looking to the physical aspect, you should look to what's going on inside of them. How are they feeling?
Yeah.
But nobody spends time with people, that's the trouble. My consultation is an hour. And I think that's not even long enough. And I do go over, and it's really hard not to, because I want to know everything. You know, I want to know how they feel, what's going on in their life, because injuries should fix themselves really quick. The body is extraordinary. We have 30 trillion cells in the body. It fixes itself really well. We have an amazing immune system, but we don't give it time to just work.
I'm going to bring Sean in here because I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. He's used to being the centre of attention, you see.
I'm sitting back and enjoying it because what Belinda's saying to me, it goes back to my Ayurvedic training, which is my teacher Ramji saying, you know, thoughts become things. You know, what you hold in your bindi will come to pass. And I, in the same way, that my biggest problem with my Achilles wasn't the healing, it was my fear. And I know certainly when I'm working with people psychotherapeutically that the issues... I mean, we know that over 60% of people that go to a GP actually have an underlying problem of anxiety, and which is the symptoms that are treated by the doctor are the symptoms, they're not the cause, which is the problem. So it's like headache, take an aspirin. Actually, we need to know why you've got the headache, not take the aspirin.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about Eastern medicine particularly, is it's the other way around. We're looking at symptoms, not causes.
Yeah. It's just we just don't... We're not patient enough to say, headaches come, should we just let it pass?
But it's instant. Our world's instant. You press a button. I've got an iPad here. I press a button and I'm in touch with the world.
Yeah.
And people expect that immediacy with their body. Yeah. And bodies are organic. They grow. They're not like that.
That's right.
Yeah. So for me, I could be saying what you're saying. And so we're talking the same language. Our roots are different, but it comes from the same place.
Yes. Yeah. It's just my observation. And, you know, what I'll say about Dr. John Sarno's, he spent 30 years observing people. You know, he worked with people with back pain, and he noticed, you know, that certain people would get better. And some people wouldn't, but the majority of people wouldn't, and so he's written this book, you know, The Mind Body Prescription, and he's written a few other books.
Bible number two of yours.
And he talks about why I'm going to tell you something I find quite extraordinary, why the brain does what it does, and why we are in pain for long periods of time. Do you want me to talk about that? So chronic pain, he's come up with a concept, and the concept is, you know, his theory that repressed emotions can trigger unconscious parts of the nervous system to create pain. So I'll explain that. So, for example, you know, you have trauma as a child, you know, whether it's bullying at school or, you know, any sort of awfulness, and you can't kind of deal with it at that time, and perhaps you're told to just swallow it and just, you know, don't worry about it, it'll go away. And then as you get older, something might happen at work and you've got a boss who's horrible, and it triggers that memory from childhood, and so you then get back pain out of nowhere, you know.
But what it's triggering is body memory, not necessarily emotional memory, because I can't understand it, or cognitive memory.
Yeah, it's not conscious. He's not conscious that his back pains come from childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's only when you start to unravel what's going on and you start to question, well, why have I got this back pain? And then you start to write. So again, I'm going to talk about the sort of methods that you can use, like journaling, and write about how you know, things, what it was like as a child. And then all of a sudden you think, oh my goodness, you know, my boss reminds me of the bully at school.
Yep.
And then the pain gets switched off, because that's what he's saying, John Sarno. It's that once you find what triggers it, the brain doesn't need to distract you anymore from the repressed emotion. Because the thing is, what he believes, John Sarno, is that your brain is protecting you. And the whole point of pain is to protect you from the unconscious stuff that's going on underneath that could kill it. And it sounds actually quite...
No. It's in psychology, or, you know, psychotherapy, I'd say that the amount of times when we're young, particularly, it doesn't happen when we're older, when we're young particularly, we create a coping mechanism to deal with the emotional situations that we can't cope with. So how do we do that? And which is exactly the same as what you're saying. Because for me, if I'm in the workplace and someone comes to me and says, I'm being bullied by a manager or something, inevitably, maybe the person's 35, And when I look at their description and what they're experiencing, I might think, that sounds like a seven-year-old. So what was happening when you were seven? And usually there's a repetition going on. So if we can go back and resolve the seven-year-old bullying issue and get rid of that, OK, now the person can go into the workplace and stand up to the manager as an adult. So I'm seeing them when they've got the emotional issues. And they're coming to you with the pain issue, so it's a different door to the same place.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, if, for example, the trauma is something, you know, horrendous, like a sexual abuse, then that's where I will then refer on to people like yourself, because that is my area, you know. But they've clearly got to dig a bit more. Yeah. And once they're digging, they'll usually find the key to the pain, you know. But people will say to me, well, how come it's triggered now, you know? Why now? And I'll say, because there's some sort of link, and that's my job to investigate, look for the link. And I get people to do what's called a timeline. I get them to start at birth, finish at adult, and write about every symptom they've ever had in their life, and see what was going on when the symptom came. So I've got many clients who have ticked many boxes about stomach pain, ulcers, headaches, you know, gastric, a huge amount of symptoms. And then when I say to them, okay, so when did that start? When did your IBS start? Oh, well, that was when, you know, I had a miscarriage. And I'm just like in awe of these people who are able to, because it does take time to connect all the dots. And then they go, oh my goodness, when I have this physical problem, it's coming from emotional. And I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's when the penny kind of drops for them.
I bet it seems quite obvious when you kind of reveal it.
Well, that's what a lot of my clients say. They'll say to me, I've never done this before. And no one's ever asked me. And I go, I know, it's just, you know, hopefully it's coming.
The work of Freud is often discredited.
Freud. This is all from Freud, that's what John Sarno says. He never meant to correct Freud or affirm him. But it's all from Freud.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Because the thing that sticks out to me from my analytical Freudian training, which I did as well, was that Freud would say, when everything that's unconscious becomes conscious, then the healing is complete.
Yes.
And I really understand that. I get,
So this is the whole concept of it. And like I say, John Sarno didn't set out to, you know, to affirm him.
Right, but he did. That's interesting, yeah.
He didn't expect to do that, you see. Yeah. So, in a roundabout way, he's ended up saying, well, Freud, you were right, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, let me just read you something. Hippocrates, okay?
Yeah.
So,
reading glasses on.
Yes.
you look far more intelligent instantly.
Yeah,
what is it about reading glasses?
This is really important. It is important to know what sort of person has the disease than the disease the person has.
Right. And
that was Hippocrates. I mean, that was 4010 BC or something.
Yeah.
Jeez.
410 BC.
And that, if I go back to the Ayurvedic stuff, you're looking at personality types, archetypes, you're looking at what would be seen as the chakra system and the dominance of endocrine organs, which are describing different types of personality, different types of bodies. Mm. And understanding the person really helps you understand the symptoms.
I say to people when they come into my room, your body's speaking to you.
Yeah.
You know, you must listen to it. And I don't mean tune into the pain, because that'll just make it worse. But I mean understand, you know, why these are... You know, I want people to question themselves. Question, why have I got back pain? And then they'll say, oh, it was because of my bed. I need to change my bed. Or it's my pillow.
Right,
I tell you what, the chair at work's rubbish. And I go, no. There are millions of people sitting on chairs like that. There are millions of people who have pillows like that. But it's kind of like... when they're sitting there and they're being told these things. But no, my physio said I should get an orthopaedic chair and an orthopaedic... And I'm like, it is to a certain degree, but it's mainly to do with you. What is it that's going on inside?
So Ramji, my teacher, would say to me, your body is your guru if you listen to your body. Right, so if I go back to my Achilles, right, why did that happen to me? So the way I see it is I don't have problems, I've got challenges and learning opportunities. So for me, pain is, okay, what's that about? Mm. What's it telling me? Yeah, so what my Achilles taught me was the addictive part of my personality that couldn't stop running. So I'd gone over like an 18-month period from never having run to I was running 16 miles and doing it all the wrong way without realising I was
backwards,
doing
it. Backwards, he was running backwards 16 yeah, miles. Yeah.
And
inevitably, it was.
So you questioned yourself.
It was me that damaged my body, if you like.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it takes time. I mean, let's face it, who has got, because I say to my clients, you need to spend a good half an hour to an hour kind of doing some journaling, kind of, you know, doing a bit of meditation, a bit of visualization, imagine yourself free of pain. It takes time, you know, and people don't have time.
I'm waving a flag here because I get the idea that people think they need quick fixes and people will tell me they don't have time, but they do have time to moan about things, they do have time to watch television, they do have time to do all kinds of things that are completely non-productive and are not helpful for them. And the issue
it's
of
choices, like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's choices. Choice.
It's a choice what people make.
What's important, what isn't. And one of the things that I think is really, really important in terms of the way we develop lifestyle is that when you develop a habit, when you've got a habit going for you, you don't need willpower or motivation because it's a habit.
Yeah, so habits are there to help us sometimes,
But the habit-forming mechanism is neutral. It doesn't care whether the habits are positive or negative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get up early in the morning and I do my meditation. I'm back into doing my running. But I will get up at 5 and do all my stuff. Yeah, and people say, oh, God, how can you do that? But it's a habit.
Yeah, one of my good friends, Dr. Des Kennedy, says to me, he said, habits are, they make our life easier.
Yeah.
Simple. Top. Yeah. So when I say to people, oh, it's, you know, you get into a habit of doing a bit, taking time out, they're like, well, I do. I go to the gym and I go, okay, so that's great and that's wonderful and it makes you feel good. Oh, well, I don't know. I just do it because I've been doing it for so long. And I'm like, well, do something that makes you feel good. You know, it's about that kind of stuff. And it's not telling people to kind of suck eggs because they all know what to do. But it's kind of like getting into a habit of doing good stuff. And even mindfulness, you know, we could talk all day about mindfulness and how it works. And, you know, even sitting, eating an apple, do we sit and taste the apple or do we just gobble it in?
Yeah, is it fuel or
inhale
is it food?
It.
Yeah, do you smell the apple before you eat it? You know, it's really important.
If you go back to the guy that's brought mindfulness into Western medicine and psychology is Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's the guy who's responsible for it. But all his initial work in Massachusetts University Hospital was all with patients with pain. Wow. So all his mindfulness stuff, all the initial research, which led to the programs around now. That's how it started, was pain issues.
Give us a couple of case studies, Belinda.
I've had a client who was blind, and she didn't go blind until she was 30. So she had many years where she wasn't blind. And when she became blind, she didn't... Well, what she thought was she's just going to get on with it. She didn't cry. She just got on with it. And, you know, in life, you know, you have to kind of address how you're going to feel about it. You know, so she didn't. And if you see, you know, she's one of those people, you wouldn't even think she was blind because she just goes out walking on her own and, you know, well, she has a dog. She's not the type of person. She's not sit at home and worry and fearful.
Yeah.
Off she goes. But what was going on was her personality. She's a very driven person. And so we looked at her childhood and we looked at her adulthood and how she behaved and how she coped. And one of them, which was really important, was that she didn't actually, like, kind of acknowledge her blindness ever, really. It was kind of... She just got on with it. And so I got her to...
And this was leading to pain problems?
Yeah, she's suffering with neck and shoulder pain for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And so she put it down to, oh, well, it's the dog's pulling on her neck. And, you know, the job that she did before. And so it was all physical problems that she put it down to.
Yep.
But then when we dug a bit deeper and she was able to kind of, I know it sounds strange, acknowledge her blindness and her frustration at being blind, the pain went.
Mm.
The pain didn't have to be there anymore because it didn't have to cover up the frustration anymore or the anger. And a lot of it can come down to anger. A lot of it can be rage and anger that's underneath it all, you know. Mm. But you have to dig a bit to get to it. So she went through the bit of well, no, I'm fine, but I've just got this neck pain and it's physical. And I go, no, it's not, because the x-ray and the x-rays may show a bit of wear and tear, but that doesn't mean, you know, that's something John Sarno spent years looking at. You know, I could talk as well a bit about how in Israel they've done loads of experiments with people, hundreds of people. They've took MRI scans of people who have back pain and MRI scans of people who don't have back pain, and they have similar abnormalities, and yet these people have got no pain. So it's not always abnormality equals pain, because they're normal abnormalities. If I was to be x-rayed today or MRI scanned, I'm sure they'll find loads of odd things, you know, spondylases and all kinds of things that go on. So there's lots of contradictions and inconsistencies.
But the issue for me is that the pain is just a nervous sensation. So is tickling, so is warmth, so is cold. It's how do we interpret what we've got? I've quoted this before, but there is a Horizon documentary. The guy goes into a theatre, and everyone's very, very nervous. He's 64, this guy. Lies on the table. There's a anaesthetist there, but he's not connected. You can see his heart rate and his blood pressure, and he literally lies there and goes 8, 9, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. He goes down to 1, then says, okay, get on with it. And the surgeons are really nervous, but they cut his wrist joint out. No anaesthetics. They cut it out and replace it with a titanium joint here. And stitch him out. 2.5 hours later, thank you very much, on your way. And afterwards, he's being interviewed, and the guy's saying, how? What? And he said, when he was 9 or 10, his uncle taught him to do what he called self-hypnosis, which actually sounded like mindful meditation when he described it. But he'd practiced for an hour a day, every day, since he was 10. And he was 64. And he said that he got to the point where he acknowledged the sensation that would normally be labelled pain, but he didn't have to label it pain. He just labelled it as sensation. Yeah. So, and he knew what was going on, so it was okay with him.
Yeah. There's loads of really good research being done by Lorimore Moseley. He's another interesting character. There's a brilliant YouTube clip, and he talks about how the pain works, you know, and he tells you about a great story when he was in the jungle and he was bit by a snake, and how he didn't realise he was bitten by a snake. He thought it was been scratched by a branch, and he thought nothing of it, and then all of a sudden he collapsed and was in, you know, A&E, and he nearly died. Then 6 months later, you know, he persevered, went back in the jungle. He was scratched by a branch. His body thought he was poisoned by a snake, and he collapsed to the floor, saying, "I have been bitten." And they were like, "You haven't." So, you know, that's the craziness of the mind.
Blimey.
It's like, you know, it didn't happen, but his body remembered what happened, and he thought it was a snake bite, and he was convinced it was another snake bite, and it wasn't. So, you know, our minds are extraordinary, and they, you know, science knows a fraction of it. Let me just mention about neuroplasticity. I mean, neuroplasticity, if you Google that, it's starting to become quite known on the internet now.
Yep.
And, you know, our brain can retrain itself. You know, at first they didn't. There's a wonderful article that I'm going to just mention about... let me just find this.
I'm going to put a link on our show notes about neuroplasticity while you do that.
Yes.
Interesting.
It's interesting. It was... it's called... Okay, let me just... It's right. It was a research that was done by New York Mount Sinai Hospital, led by Rachel Yehuda, Y-E-H-U-D-A. And basically what she realised was that... the children of Auschwitz survivors, their genetics had changed. They were saying was that children of Auschwitz, it's all about epigenetics now. They're saying that at one time genes don't change, you know, they're inset, steel, and that's the way they are. But now they're saying environment. Your environment can change your genes, and they've proven it with this case in, you know, the Auschwitz survivors.
So in neuropsychology these days, we'd say that the genome that you're born with isn't the genome that you die with. and that the genome that you have is changed by your experience and your learning.
Yes.
Which is passed on to your kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So and now we look at it in terms of one lifetime is like a drop in the ocean of evolution. We're still changing and evolving, yeah. But we didn't. It's so slow we don't realise it.
We are changing, evolving all the time.
Have you ever come across the research that was done by the Transcendental Meditation lot? TM, and the TM technique was 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening, and it was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the guy who got the Beatles meditating, and he ended up with ashrams in the Netherlands, but in the Arizona, the big ashram there, they did research where they were brain scanning people before they'd started meditating, and then so 20 minutes twice a day, and then they meditated them 1 year and two...
Brain scan,
that's weird. 1 year, 2 years, yeah, I need a brain scan. What they found was that all the tissue around the emotional areas of the brain had all become much denser, and the structure of the brain had changed totally. Wow. So a bit like someone doing a barbell on a bicep. Yeah. That the more they meditated, the denser the tissues became. Yes. So they reckon, neuropsychology now, that we can produce up to 1,400 new brain cells a day in response to new learning.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so we can have a new brain all the time if you want.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Wonderful. Well, you got a new sheet there, Belinda?
There's a book I just recommend. It's called The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge.
I've got it. Yeah. That's a good one.
Jeez. Yeah.
So, you know, there's some amazing books out there that, you know, if we want to know stuff, Google it. You know, absolutely wonderful. What I will say that was really interesting as well was that they did another sort of bit of research on... They asked a load of people in a room to imagine feeling happy, and then they asked them where they experienced the happy feeling in their body, and it's the body of emotion, and basically this information, I'm just trying to look for it now, I'd written it down, that they're saying that the body experiences emotion in different parts of the body.
Yeah.
Because one thing we must understand, I'll just mention a really good book as well, Molecules of Emotion, by Candace Pert. Mm. Now, she was a geneticist or a scientist over in America, and she spoke about that every molecule in our body has a receptor for emotion. Mm. So, you know, we have 30 trillion cells and we have receptors for emotion, and there's more of them, obviously, in the brain, in the stomach and in various places. Oh, yeah. That connect to emotion. So it kind of when you certainly my position at the moment, I'm connecting dots together. I'm reading one book and then I go on YouTube and I hear something else, and you start to think, oh my goodness, everyone's meeting almost really in the same place, where the body does. It's not just the mind that it's the body that experiences and has memory. And again, my good friend Des Kennedy, he's always said to me that we carry our history in our body. Mm. It's all there.
Like the rings in a tree.
Like the rings of a tree, yeah.
Synchronicity.
I know, there's a lot of energy coming out from Linda, isn't there? She's pretty enthusiastic about this stuff. No, don't apologise. It's amazing. Because we've got to wrap up soon, but where next for pain care massage? Because you're still early on your journey, really, aren't
you? Yes. What I would say to people is that... just give people a few tips, really, some strategies that I offer to people, which they can do at home. You know, journaling. Google what journaling is. I mean, journaling has been going for a long, long time. It's not new. It's just got a new name, journaling. And one thing's for sure, Richard Branson journals. He carries a little book around with him, and he journals every day. He must do. He must have to. You know, he must feel stress during the day.
Yeah.
And so when you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, get your little notepad out and write about it. Now, this isn't a diary. This is something that could be thrown away. You know, it's not about making notes and rereading it. It's literally just getting your stuff out your head on paper.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not an expressive person and you can't talk to your mate in the next desk or your husband at home, journal about it, write about it, you know. Loads of tips on the internet. Really good to visualise yourself being out of pain. really crucial to imagine yourself walking the miles if you've never done it, you know. And there's loads of research on that, you know. Olympic athletes, they visualise. They are far greater. There's some sort of case study out there where they had some people do it visually and some people do it. And the ones who visualised it...
were that much better.
Yeah. So it's visualisation has been going for thousands of years. Come on, you know, use it. Mm. Self-talk, really crucial. Important to talk to yourself and give yourself, you know, positive feedback. Oh, you know, oh, I did that today. That was really good.
Yeah.
You know, really important to communicate with ourselves. We know all about meditation, mindfulness.
We all do. We don't all do it.
Yoga, breathing. You know, all these things are all out there at a touch, you know. And try not give yourself negative thoughts, you know, about, oh, my back, you know, I'm getting old. You know, there's people climbing mountains at the age of 90.
Yep.
You know, come on, why not
I'm
you?
I'm going for runs in the morning.
And go for, you know.
Not quite 90, though.
110.
So, yeah, I mean...
Well, Sean, I know I'm kind of seeing you two here and seeing Belinda as the body person and you as the head person, but we need
we're talking the same language.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we need to fuse you together.
It's the issues of thoughts become things. It's that kind of thing. And the visualisation is crucial for me because when we think of something, it's the issue of... If I say, think of a horse, you don't think H-O-R, you actually see a horse, you know, and everything is visual. And so in the live in the present stuff, we talk about you wake up in the morning, what's the first thought in your mind? Because you're starting to write the script for your day. Your day's going to be what you want it to be before you get there, which is really, really important. The thing about writing stuff down, which we'd say in the live in the present stuff, is that when you write something down, even if you do it on a computer, you have to process it from both your head and your heart to make it coherent, as opposed to ruminating with it inside, then putting it back to say
it's all about
later.
Feelings, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's processing it and then letting it go. So we'd often say on the Live in the Present programme that if you're writing maybe a letter to someone who's dead or someone...
Oh, yeah, unsent letters, wonderful, yes, that kind of course, stuff. Yeah,
but then the idea of being able to maybe burn it afterwards, so you consciously... But
ritual.
You'd actually read it out loud before you burn it. So you process it with thinking, feeling, and then you've done the auditory stuff.
Right.
Okay, now let's let it go.
Yeah. I mean, one will say as well, is journaling. You know, my blind client couldn't write. She used her finger and pretended to write, and it worked wonderfully.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but it's the processing.
It's the processing of how she felt.
Yeah.
And not just... You know, what's a good tip as well, if you don't sleep so well at night because of your pain or, you know, you just find things ruminating in your head, offload. You know, have a little notepad at the side of your bed before you go to sleep and just, you know, it could be nothing. It could be, oh, I must remember to put the milk out or, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. Just offload it and you know. And if you wake up in the middle of the night, offload again onto a piece of paper and go back to sleep.
I think it's resource of the week time, chaps. Sean, you go first.
Well, I've got two resources I want to shout out for. One is the Meditation Oasis.
Oh, yeah, I haven't heard that in a while.
There's quite a few things about pain on there, which are good meditation.
Pain-specific meditation soundtrack stuff.
And they're good. Richard and Mary Maddox are good on that. But also Jon Kabat-Zinn, Catastrophe Living. His initial work was all about and the mindfulness stuff that we now use.
Catastrophe Living.
Yeah, comes from the work that he did, where he effectively had used Buddhism with the Buddha taken out. So we've got more kind of a scientific approach to, or more of a kind of, I don't know, it's hard, science, spiritual, I don't know, but we haven't got the religiosity in it.
Mm.
And all his initial work and research was done on patients with pain, which is phenomenal work.
Yes.
You know, so I'd recommend all that.
It's cool. Yeah. I found a TED Talk, which I haven't actually watched yet, I must admit, but it comes very highly rated on here, called The Mystery of Chronic Pain by a chap called Elliot Crane. Have we mentioned him yet at all or not?
No, we're going to have a look.
18-minute little snippet.
I mean, and I just say as well, stress can be good. You know, stress drives us, you know, can be...
But the thing
it's
is
how
it,
you direct it.
People talk about stress like we talk about colds. It's like people never have a cold, they have the flu.
Yeah.
And people tell me they're stressed when they're busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what are we talking about? It's the way we perceive it.
Yeah, it's about perception, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, oh, I've had to get out of bed today, I'm really stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because stress will be in our life forever. It's you know, with every single day, there's a bit of stress, but it's how you turn it round, you know. Oh, right, I've got to be here at this time and that at that time, right. And it's how you react to it.
A lot of people will go for a run if they're stressed, and that will kind of, dissolve.
My 11-year-old son today said to me, Mummy, can I have a punch bag? Because I'm sick of the boys nicking the ball off me at school, and I need to have a punch bag to get me in. I was like, of course.
Wow.
Of course. You know, because he's full of anger. Instead of him trashing his bedroom.
It's a punch bag.
Or punching the other kids.
Yeah, or punching, which he doesn't want to do, you see, which he feels like doing. So, so I'm going to hit you a punch bag. Brilliant.
Okay, cool. So you've mentioned a couple of books already. Which I'll put in. Are there any other books you want to talk
There's
about?
There's one book that I absolutely love at the moment, called When the Body Says No by Gabor Maté. Now, he is a French doctor, public speaker. If anyone's interested in disease, bothered by family with disease, this is an extraordinary book. It will open your mind to no end. He basically was a guy who went away and interviewed people with motor neurons, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, and he is finding people who have certain personalities or certain childhood issues are usually the ones that are kind of coming out with all sorts of diseases. Uh-huh. It's extraordinary. It's an absolutely amazing book. It's just opens your mind.
Life-changing stuff.
Absolutely.
As ever on this podcast, we aim to please, don't we, Sean?
We do. I'm ordering books here as we're talking.
Oh, blimey. Left, right and centre wish list. Cool. Belinda, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Hope you've had fun.
Yes, I have.
Paincaremassage.co.uk is your website, which we encourage people to go look at.
Yes,
you're on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff.
Yes.
I know you're Facebook,
I'm on
don't
them.
You?
Yeah, definitely.
And what next in your journey? Where are you going to be? What are you
doing? I'd like to do workshops for people because I think it's great doing one-to-one. Love it. But I know that I want to get the information out there to more people because I don't feel I should hold on to it all myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that when you've got something and it feels real and it feels true, you have to share it. So I'm hoping to do workshops and potentially, some public speaking in some way, I don't know. Because, like I say, it's about telling people about this. I don't want to just hold on to this, I've got to share it.
Go get your own podcast.
Oh, yeah. It is quite cute, actually. It looks like a little robot.
The microphone, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, my lad's got another one.
But I'd want you to come and show him.
Easy, yeah, why not? All right, cool. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Great.
Looking forward to catching up soon. Maybe we'll get you back, in a few months and see where you're up to and what have you. Next week.
You'll be advertising your public speaking events.
Oh, I know, remember us when you're famous, eh?
Oh, yeah.
YouTube star.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're talking about next week, Sean, as we're getting a bit rubbish at. But it'll be something interesting.
It's because we're stacking on episodes at the moment.
Yeah.
Where we are stockpiling some episodes because we're moving into summer holiday time. And we know that certainly Ed won't be around for a lot of August.
No, I'll be up in
The caravan.
The northeast where there's no internet, no electricity.
Yeah.
So, but the podcast will be going out week after week regardless, won't it?
He can't get on the internet. He has to go down the end of the field and kind of lean over the fence.
Sit on a trampoline and get a bit of free Wi-Fi. That's how I do it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, lovely place.
Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. Check out the show notes and links from this and all previous episodes. One final big thanks to Belinda for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
See you soon. Mm-hmm. And Sean, you take it easy.
You.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.